Can I throw a wild idea by you? I saw more of the artist renderings of the stadium came out, and some people noticed that the place where the dog pound would be is a giant fan wall like they have with the Clippers. And this one would be like the biggest fan wall in North America in the end zone. And it looks really cool. I had a lot of people over this last week. Once, you know, June 30th came around and Mike DeWine put the Herbie Hancock on things. And, hey, the Browns are going to get it. We're getting the stadium. We're getting ready to go. Off they're going to go. What if they, because there were a lot of people going, man, they're just getting a reward for not being good. They're just, they haven't been good. Okay, how about this? What if you have your fan wall, everything's there? By the way, I know what day it is. It's July 3rd. What if they just don't call it the dog pound until they make the playoffs? You got to make the playoffs in the building before it's actually called the dog pound. Because there's been a lot of people, hear me out on this, there's been a lot of people over these last 25 years ago, yeah, they call it the dog pound, but it's not really the dog pound. The team's not good. And I go, okay, just like Ohio State with the black stripe. You go into the new building, it's this brand new opulent building. Now we'll see, maybe they'll have their own version of Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen by then, and it's going to be a moot point, and they've gone to the playoffs a couple of times. Yeah, if they go to the playoffs the year before, go ahead, call it the dog pound the year. But what if you got to go to the playoffs in the new building before it gets called the dog pound. They have to, the team, fans have already earned whatever they want to call it. The team has to earn the title of the dog pound. Because there was no signage in the dog pound in the old stadium. There was signage in the new stadium. But again, I go back to what people have been saying for the last 25 years. What if?
What, that there was no dog pound really in that stadium?
Last one, it was called the dog pound.
Yeah, they had upper level and lower level dog pound.
You had the bench seats, but it wasn't. It was like the one playoff season you had, you couldn't have but 12,000 people in the stadium because of COVID. This last year or 2 years ago, it was like, oh my God, they're actually going to the playoffs. I can't believe they're going to the playoffs here. And if everybody's like, man, you know, if they were 14-3, it'd be a little bit easier. It'd be a lot more fun to be like, hey, new stadium, all that stuff. What if they just had to earn the name? The team has to earn the name Dog Pound. You make the playoffs, banner comes down the next day. It's not the banner like Jim Irsay would be, rest in peace. But it would be like, hey, okay, the team, they have the Dog Pound now. The team has earned the name the Dog Pound for the end zone.
The team can't talk about the Dog Pound. Jimmy Haslam and D can't talk about the dog pound.
It's up to them. I'm asking
Andrew
about the team.
Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski.
It's the team. The team has to earn. We got to earn the name dog pound in the end zone for the fans. We got to make the playoffs.
You know, I'm thinking about,
might be dumb.
I think it's an interesting idea because we've had so many people tell us flat out, dog pound is dead. We don't have a dog pound anymore. What is it that we're even discussing this? There's no home field advantage. It's not like one side of the stadium is that much louder than the other side of the stadium.
Think about that. Well, when you're underneath a roof, it's going to be louder.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's going to be louder.
Yeah, for sure.
But let me throw this out there. Play this scenario for you in your heads. Say Shedeur Sanders wins a starting job later on this year and ends up being good.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2028 comes around. It's the final season in the old building. And, you know, he goes, damn it, we've challenged ourselves. We want to make the playoffs. We got to make the playoffs. So next year, opening day, we got the dog pound for the fans. We owe it to the fans to make the playoffs. We've put this goal for us. We got to be a playoff team. We got to be this type of team, X, Y, Z. So we win the name, the dog pound, put the name on there for the fans.
So it has to be.
And we get the fans going.
So it has to be a playoff game.
It has to be a playoff team.
You got to be a playoff team. Does it matter if you get bounced in the first round? Does it matter any of that?
No.
Okay.
So just be a playoff team.
So like the Joe Flacco team would have earned dog pound status.
Yes. I think a lot of it probably would backfire considering the way they lost, but they would. You got to be a playoff team.
Well, tell people about the wall because they got to understand how different this is.
If you guys go look at the renderings and go look at what the Clippers arena. I don't know the name of the arena off the top of my head, but there's like just a giant. There's no middle concourse there. It's just basically a wall of fans, a giant wall of fans. That goes up for rows and rows and rows and rows and rows and rows and rows. and Dr. Rosen, and it's going to be huge. And it, and I think it's going to be the biggest fan wall, because I think they do this in European soccer as yes. well. It's going to be the biggest fan wall in North America. It might be the biggest fan wall in professional sports. I'm not sure which one's which, but I know, I think it's going to be the biggest one in North America. And eventually it would be called the Dog Pound. And the fans call it whatever they want. But there's been so many times where it's like, well, the team calls it the Dog Pound, but it ain't really the Dog Pound. And I go, okay, you want to earn the dog, but you want to have the name Dog Pound, then damn it, the players got to go out there and earn it. If you want to wake up the echoes of old Browns teams in the past, then they got to go out there and earn it. Because we talk about history, and so many times I think we get tradition and history mixed up. The Browns have a rich history, very, very vivid, great history. But you have to protect tradition. You have to uphold tradition. The Dog Pound is a tradition. You have to uphold it. The Dog Pound was born from good football being played in that stadium. They didn't just make up the Dog Pound when things were bad. No, those were good players playing good football.
And it was organic.
In the stadium, it was organic. Well, now you're going to have something there. Like the Black Hole came with them from Las Vegas, but there's plenty, or from Oakland to Las Vegas, there's plenty of people say, well, it's not the Black Hole the way it used to be. Well, nothing's ever going to be the way it used to be. Fine.
But Kenny, I'm thinking, I remember,
this is one way to make them earn something if you want to do it that way.
The biggest criticism when they came over in 99 in the Rush Stadium setup, man, we had Terry Pluto on yesterday to talk about some of that. When they rushed everything, I remember they brought out the very corporate signage, Dog Pound. And yes, they made it bleacher seating, which it was kind of funny. It's like, hey, you're in the Dog Pound, you get worse seats. Which is, you know, I guess the theory was that they were going to cram them in a little bit. So they did, but it wasn't the same. You didn't have that fencing. You didn't have the fact that the players could literally just jump on in very easily to the Dog Pound, hand footballs over, you know, go up to the grassy knoll that they had over there, the hill, to get into the Dog Pound. And obviously they didn't win. The most important factor of all is that they didn't win, and yet it was still called the Dog Pound. And I remember listening to sports talk radio, is the Dog Pound dead? Is it really even a thing anymore? So,
and I've always been a denier of that. I go, no, the team just has to win to wake up all that stuff again. Well, okay, the team officially has to win. If they go to the playoffs in 2028, fine.
We're back in.
Yeah, you can call it the Dog Pound from day one. But if there's some 4-win team and everybody's like, oh, God, here we go. Okay, fine, make them earn it in the new building. Is it a terrible idea?
What do you think Frank Minifield, Hanford Dixon, what do you think their thoughts?
Oh, my God. Day one, new Browns make the playoffs in 2028. You already know where I'm going. Opening day, day one, new stadium. Frank, Hanford, they're the ones who break the guitar. They're right there. Boom, the Dog Pound signage is there. Away you go. They're the Dog Pound captains for that game. Opening. I got to be in marketing. Incredible. I know all this stuff.
We got two young guys here. We got Mitch and Matt. Yeah. During the break, I want you guys to look up Dog Pound videos from the late 80s, early 90s.
The dudes in the masks.
Look it up and understand what it is before you can, because I don't think they have any idea. I don't think they could truly speak to the Dog Pound. I think they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, I went to a game. I was in the upper Dog Pound. No, you weren't. You were not in the Dog Pound.
Well, some of those things that they did at the old Dog Pound, things you just can't do in a...
No.
You can't bring in some fake doghouse with beer underneath it, a keg underneath
the keg.
It.
Yeah.
Some of the things that have been claimed in the Dog Pound and back in those days, which maybe are tall tales, but at the same time, still, you can't do that.
It wasn't tall tales. They threw batteries and dog bones at John Elway during the game. They had to switch sides of the football
field. Talking about things that might have been Caligula.
Yeah, there's some of that too. Absolutely.
All right, coming up at 7:20, Bobby Martin. You're telling me I've had worse ideas?
I think you talked me into it, because when I caught wind of this yesterday, I kept asking, Kenny, you're not explaining this. What is the Dog Pound? NBA free agency, not exactly the frenzy of prior years, more of NBA trade season. We've seen a lot of it, and we've seen some interesting things done around the NBA. Nobody better to talk about that and to help navigate the new world, the new era of the second apron. It's Bobby Marks of ESPN. Bobby, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
How are you? Good to have you. Good to have you on.
Yeah, absolutely. On the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, Bobby Marks joins us. And help us understand, if you can, how the Cavaliers, with Ty Jerome coming off his incredible, the efficient season that he had, we thought he was going to maybe get starter money from a team.
Yeah.
That certainly did not happen, and he's no longer on the Cavs. How did that go down?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of you know, where the market was, I mean, you did see players like Nickeil Alexander-Walker get, I guess, non-tax mid-level money, which is $14 million, you know, to pay a, and Ty had a really good year, you know, I guess to pay a backup, you know, starter type money is probably not the world we live in now. It's almost like players are pegged or slotted based on where they are as far as whether you're a starter or your rotation. Certainly in Cleveland, you have, you know, your core guys are making a lot of money. And then you have, you know, Sam's going to come in at a, you know, $8, $9 million number. He's your bench guy, right? So you almost slot guys as far as how you perceive them. And that's, you know, the day and age of having like, you know, four or five max guys is over. And yeah, I mean, he gets it. And I think there's also he gets a player option in the third year. He goes to a Memphis team that potentially he could be playing a lot. You can kind of build your value back up again and then hit free agency in 2 years.
Just the way that, you know, just looking at it from a team philosophy, you know, Ty Jerome last year was so good that there was almost zero drop off from Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland to Ty. Now, I understand he did not perform well in that Pacers series, but it didn't seem like anybody performed well outside of Donovan Mitchell in that series. So why do you think they felt that he was disposable, but not Sam Merrill?
Yeah, I mean, I think shooting is probably a little bit more of a premium. I think the ability to get, you know, and you knew what probably what number you wanted to walk away from or what number you wanted to go down the path with Ty before you did the Alonzo trade to get him, and you get him on a, you know, a 2 year, $2 million per year in the second year's team option there. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different variables there. I think, you know, were you willing to commit 3 years? Were you comfortable with, you know, fully guaranteed 10 years, you know, was it maybe even more? So it's, you know, Lonzo gives you, you know, when he's healthy, you know, pretty high level backup, you know, certainly could start and everything here. But I think there's a lot of kind of intangibles as far as why Ty in Memphis makes more sense than maybe him at Cleveland. Cleveland fans are like, why couldn't we have had him on that 3 year, $27 million contract? And that's probably something for Ty to answer here. And I think it's, as I said, it kind of gives him the opportunity to go back into free agency in a couple of years.
You know, when I see other deals given out like Gary Trent Jr., what, 2 years, $7.5 million?
Yeah, the minimum.
Were agents totally off? Were they not necessarily ready for just how little money was going to be available?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a lot different than, you remember 2016, we had that cap spike. And everyone went out and made a lot of money. It was like basically like the housing market.
Mozgov,
and
then
I think, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then I think agents were caught off the following year, and then there was no money. And a lot of agents got fired because their client was saying, well, wait a minute, if Timothy Mozgov or Joakim Noah or Bismack Biyombo already getting $14, $15 million, that's what I got. I want, and, you know, there's only $6 or $7 million there. I don't think they were caught off guard. I just think the market is, you know, we see an influx of extensions, and the marketplace by doing that, I think we had like 40 to 50 last year, it just condenses as far as how much teams have to spend. I mean, you can certainly say there was Brooklyn that had cap space, and then Milwaukee goes out and creates cap space, but at a premium where you're getting, you know, $25 million or, you know, $23.5 million hit for the foreseeable future here. So, I think there are some, like, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. is a good example. Like, for him, you know, the market probably for what he was looking at probably wasn't great. But you could go to Denver and come off the bench and with Jokic in that group and really, you know, flourish. And maybe you can make your next contract up next year.
Bobby Marks joining us right now on the hotline. Hey, give me a better way to explain to our listeners and fans what is going on with the second apron. They're sick and tired of hearing it. Almost every conversation we have does reference it in some way. So how can we simplify all of this?
Well, it's funny. I went on the Dan Patrick show yesterday, and he asked me that. He goes, "Okay, if you're going into a school of fifth graders, how would you explain it to them?" And I was like, "Wow, I've never really been asked that before in that way." And it kind of got me like thinking. And so basically, how I explained it, and hopefully this makes sense, is that if you were a child and your parents gave you 20 toys, and you had everything you could play with. And then the next year they came back and they said, well, wait a minute, you can only have five of those toys. Pick your best five best toys. Give me the other 15 back. That's kind of the apron as far as it makes you kind of pick and choose as far as who you want to keep. You can keep your own, but it, as I said, as you guys are going through it, it makes it awfully expensive. What it doesn't allow you to do, if you're that child, you can't go over and say to Johnny, I want to borrow two of your toys, and because that's not allowed now because of how punitive these are, whether it be in trades or in free agency to go out and sign players here. There's no penalties for besides the cost, you know, standpoint and you know the first round pick stuff that we can explain. You are allowed to pick your keep your team together here, but you know there's the financial angle of it that makes it awfully expensive. We saw it with Boston as far as the deconstruction of their roster. We're probably going to see it with Phoenix coming up in the next few days here, but the goal was to try to level the playing field and give more parity, you know, and we've certainly seen it. It's had a severe, I've said this before, and hopefully my friends in the league don't get mad. I've never seen two words that scared so many billionaires before. I mean, it really is. I mean, like when the Lakers sale was announced a couple weeks ago, and Mark Walter, who is the owner of the Dodgers and has, you know, got a ton of money, everyone said, well, look at what the Dodgers have been able to do. They've been going out and basically buy a roster. You know, there's no salary cap and everything like that. How is it going to impact the Lakers? And I was like, well, look at Steve Ballmer's one of the wealthiest men in the world, and so is Joe Lacob. Look at what happened with them last year, right? I mean, the Kroenkes, Walmart. I mean, they're scared of the apron. You know, Josh Kroenke has come on TV and said it. So it does make you make it. What it does is make you really become creative. It makes you like, I don't want to say teams were lazy beforehand, but it makes you negotiate. And you kind of have to draw a line in the sand as far as what's important to you and what's a priority and what's more of a luxury.
All right. So you mentioned why the NBA changed its ways. People had really gotten tired of the superstars all teaming up. The super teams felt like nobody had a shot outside of three or four teams. Well, clearly that's different now. We've had seven different champions in 7 years. Did we go from 0 to 100 when maybe we only needed to go to like 50? Why did they go to such lengths to completely overhaul their CBA?
Yeah, Golden State and the Clippers ruined it for everyone else. Yeah. I mean, that's probably what happened. And maybe even Brooklyn we can throw in there. No, it's a good point as far as we went. Because it's funny, the rules came into place in 2023. And I felt like I was a weatherman. You know, I was kept on saying, the storm is coming. And then I wrote an article last June, and people were like, where did these rules come from? It was like they were introduced 2 years ago. And I think it's funny, if you're a Cavaliers fan who never had to deal with it, now you're getting an introduction to the apron rules and everything. And that's one, you know, listen, there's been a lot of talk about LeBron and what happens with him and Lakers, and can, you know, hypothetically, can Cleveland get him? And basically the answer is no, because the apron rules, the inability to aggregate contracts, combine contracts to send out, doesn't allow you to go out and add, a marquee player if you're buried financially.
It just feels like we would understand it if we were a super team, right? And we had built a team inorganically. I mean, we drafted Darius Garland. We drafted Evan Mobley. We made a great trade and got the superstar to sign an extension. And yet feels like we're being penalized. And what do we have to show for it? We haven't been out of the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and you got Jared Allen, too, in a terrific trade, right? I mean, it was like kind of like, you know, in the, as part of that James Harden trade here. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think there are – listen, Brooklyn tried to put a super team together. Golden State, you could make the same thing for as far as they paid a price, significant price, and they drafted Curry, Thompson, and Green. I know they added KD there. I do think there are – I would love to see – teams from a salary standpoint, you know, maybe guys that you draft, you're not charged the full amount from a salary standpoint. Maybe we're looking at two different columns here, because then it does reward you a little bit more as far as the ability to kind of retain some of your in-house talent.
All right, Bobby Marks with us. Just a few more. The pecking order in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, Indiana is out.
Yeah.
The injury to Ty Halliburton obviously changed the complexion of everything. But would you kind of weigh in on where Atlanta is? Yeah. Nobody's talking about Philadelphia and what just went down with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Dame Lillard move.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could start from the top. I mean, I think, you know, Cleveland, I mean, it's funny, nobody talks about Cleveland. They won 64 games, and I know they lost in the second round, and they bring back pretty much everyone. But I think Cleveland and New York are the two best teams just based on they're like the last man standing, right? They didn't really lose anyone significant. I know Ty hurts a little bit here. And then after that, it's like, you know, Philly's a wild card, and, you know, they were the winners last offseason, but it's going to be dependent on where Joel Embiid is. I mean, that the health standpoint plays a significant role, and Milwaukee with the Turner addition, but you lose Lillard, and I know Damian was going to be out most of the year, and they bring back most of that roster. So they're kind of in the middle. Of course, you know, we haven't talked as much Atlanta Hawks and Orlando Magic on TV ever. We've been talking about them, and rightfully so, the last couple of days, just because of what Atlanta's been able to do and add, whether it be Porzingis or Nickeil Alexander-Walker or Luke Kennard, Ethan Newell they drafted, and then Orlando certainly with Desmond Bane trade, and they add Tyus Jones. They've done a nice job. The East is, you know, I think it's pretty wide open. You know, we're not talking about Boston. We're not talking about Indiana who lose Turner. We'll see Detroit, of course, we can probably throw in the mix here, but I do think there's a lot of parity. But I do think, you know, we can't dismiss Cleveland because they won 64 games. And as I said, I know losing this was disappointing here, but you do return pretty much that whole roster.
We played a clip yesterday on the show with Kevin Durant on a podcast with Steve Nash, and LeBron James said, this league is not for small guards. It's really tough to win. Obviously the Cavs are built with two guards that are short. Donovan Mitchell, you wouldn't really classify him as small, but Darius is obviously someone they alluded to. Do you think there are plenty of different ways to still win in the NBA, or do you think that it'll be tough for the Cavs to get over the hump with their setup?
I don't think. I mean, listen, I know, I mean, New York's got a pretty small guard in Jalen Brunson, and I know they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, I mean, Shea's length is probably, you know, Shea's 6'3", but he's long and athletic here. I just think it's a matter of, like, what else is around that player, right? I mean, I think it's a matter of, you know, if you have two small guards, what's, you know, who's your 3, 4, and 5? I think that makes a big deal. And I mean, I think it is a little bit different maybe in the playoffs, and matchups make it a little bit harder as far as from a guarding standpoint. I think every team is kind of different here. I wouldn't dismiss just because you have a small guard that you don't have a chance to win a championship.
One final note, you've worked at NBA front offices, and it seems like now agents are dictating a lot more in the draft, especially later in the first and into the second. If you are someone who has to field a phone call from an agent that says, I don't want you guys to pick us, what are you doing?
I'm probably picking you. I think it, everything is circumstantial here. I think a lot of it is different. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, teams did not have the ability to have medicals. Unless you came and visited, or maybe they showed up for the free draft camp, and not everyone did. I think the information that you have on a player is more available, whether it be medical, whether it be background, whether it be everything that comes with it here. I mean, the Utah situation was certainly unique, and with Ace Bailey, who they drafted, and then was he coming? Was he not coming here? I think sometimes, you know, 18-year-olds or 19-year-olds are given bad advice. I saw Ace Bailey get drafted last Wednesday. He looked like the happiest guy in the building. And I saw him get off that plane on Saturday, and he looked like the happiest guy, him and his family here. So I do think you have to be careful as far as steering your client. Listen, we saw way back when with Eli Manning, right? He didn't want to go to the Chargers. He wanted to go to the Giants, and they did a really good job of that. But I do think there's a difference between doing that and then when you get drafted and then all of a sudden be like, no, I don't want to go to that team. I think that's two separate things.
All right, Bobby, appreciate everything. You're terrific on social media. And anytime you can talk to someone like me, like a fifth grader, and help dump something down.
That's my new, you know, I've spent 2 years learning the apron now, and I never realized I could just explain it like a teacher in fifth grade, you know?
All right, great stuff, Bobby. We'll do it again.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Bobby Marks on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Now the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Well, it was another tough night at Wrigley Field as the Cleveland Guardians have lost now a season-high 6 straight games. 5-4 decision to the Cubs last night. So the offense got it going early on. They had 3 straight home runs, 2 of them straight actually, 3 and 3 innings between Carlos Santana, Lane Thomas, and David Fry. I thought things are going well, but the Cubs made Tanner Bibee work hard. 4 innings in the books for Bibee on 96 pitches, and they eventually chased him in that 4th. Bibee talking post-game and very candid on his performance.
Pretty bad. Just nothing was really working. Pretty pathetic, honestly.
I didn't even think he was spotting the ball poorly because he had a walk in every single inning, but they were making him go 2-2 counts, 3-2 counts. And by the time you get to that 4th inning on a hot summer night in Chicago, then the bats are going to start flying. He was just getting chased.
They finally had a starter that could pitch with a lead. You know, it's been almost non-existent for this team. Just scoring runs at all has been non-existent. And Kenny, you had the number on this. You had the one occurrence on how this team is ever going to win again. They haven't won since when?
They have not won a game since Jose Ramirez was hit in retaliation.
Oh, because the night prior was the walk-off win.
Yeah, what do you think of that, buddy?
I mean, it's a tough stretch right now. And I said last night the situation. I said last night the situation with Matt Shaw missing first base and the umpire making the mistake on that call. I thought that might have been another opportunity.
Play the game under protest.
For Vogt to kind of like get fired up and get something going.
Is that not the most worthless thing in sports is playing games under protest?
I think they should do it more.
Oh, God. Would you have to do it at the Little League level? You will know.
I love a game being played under protest.
Is George Brett, the Pine Tar game, the only one that's ever been successfully under protest?
What, did they overturn?
I think
they overturned that, yeah.
It's got to be one
but
of the
what did
very
they do? Did
few.
They pick up the game when it happened?
Like weeks later, yeah, in Yankee Stadium.
I don't know. I got to tell you, there's been a lot of times where I've seen a manager at the Little League level. This game is officially under protest. Like they like I've seen them like stuff it in the shirt pocket like they were Bill Cowher, and it's just like that's gonna get a lot done. I'm sure you're gonna get your way out of this.
It would be the best gag ever. What is it? Is it the Rockies still have the worst record in all of baseball? They're 19-67. If I were their manager, every game would be held under protest. Every single one.
I'll find a reason. Continue, Mitch.
Some positives, though, yesterday for the Guardians in the naming of the American League All-Star starters for the game down in Atlanta here in just a couple of weeks. Jose Ramirez, your starting AL third baseman. For the 7th time in his career, he is one shy of surpassing Bob Feller for the most All-Star game appearances by a Cleveland Indians / Guardians player. I mean, this is a historic run for our top player who, by the way, did you see the graphic last night? Batting like 340-some on the year, the rest of the team 200
yep.
On average.
And in his own way, I read Zach Meisel, where Zach Meisel had interviewed Jose, and even though the numbers say differently, Zach Meisel writes that Jose is still believes that he's not having a great season. Even though the numbers would tell you he's having a great season, and everybody who watches him tells you he's having a great season, Jose does not believe he's having a great season.
That is exactly what I would expect him to say. Kwan's down to 292 now.
Yeah, it's been a little sketchy for him right now. He did have the sacrifice fly last night, but there haven't been a lot of like early impact hits that have led to the runs. Although the running and scoring position has been a big problem for the Guardians lineup so far this season.
Well, I got to tell you, all the Browns need to do is go out there, and I know that we have a history with this when it comes to Myles Garrett, but boy, you just got to refuse to get pushed around here because a lot of people, I think, are so down about the Cavs because the refusal to, I guess, man up, for the lack of a better word, and then you have this where a lot of people are just putting it right there where you let Jose Ramirez get retaliated against. You don't do anything after that. You don't even get yourself thrown out. Austin Hedges has a players-only meeting. That didn't go. You've lost the last week of baseball games.
Can I have a good players-only meeting?
You got to have something for someone, man, because you can lose. But, man, if you won't fight, that's the worst.
If you do a players-only meeting, but they're all bad players, I don't know what that's
going to be. Well, it always turns into that. You never have a players-only meeting when things are going good.
No, not at all.
Except for like the 90s Cowboys. They had a lot of players-only meetings when things were going well.
That's at the White House. That's at the clubs. That's where we have our – that's after hours.
But everything else, never a good thing.
Going over to the NBA yesterday, some news. According to reports, the New York Knicks may be centering in on their next head coach, a familiar face around here in Cleveland. Mike Brown looks to be becoming the next head coach of the Knicks. A guy that's been around the league a number of times, was ousted from Sacramento last year despite having a great run in the previous season. And this is a guy that I've stated has been one of the most undervalued coaches within the last two decades of the NBA, especially now as the value of NBA coaches has gone down to where we're firing championship coaches over the last couple of years.
I have something maybe controversial to say, but I want Lima to give his thoughts first.
The Mike Brown career is going to be studied. You know, Andrew Brand always talks about the business Hall of Famers. Mike Brown has got to be one of them because this guy was, we all know the backstory on how he got in under Popovich's staff, film guy, you know, video editor guy. And he ends up coaching in Los Angeles. He ends up coaching the Lakers, the Knicks. People forget he was 12-0 in the playoffs with the Kevin Durant Golden State Warriors team before Steve Kerr came back. Not only that, he's going to make over $100 million career earnings. Yeah, Mike Brown. He's been two-time coach of the year. He's been on four staffs that have won the championship. I think there are very few people who would trade their coaching careers with Mike Brown. Like, in the history of the NBA, how many coaches would trade with Mike Brown?
All right, you ready for this?
Go ahead.
Is he the Don Nelson of our generation?
Ooh.
Do you even know who Don Nelson is, Mitch?
I know Don Nelson was at one point the winningest coach in NBA history.
He coached for a very long time.
Coach of the Mavericks.
So was Lenny. Warriors. Lenny was the winningest and losingest coach for a while.
Is he this generation's Don Nelson, where he doesn't probably get the credit he deserves? He gets a lot of guff. I gave Don Nelson a lot of guff back in the day. Not that anybody cared. Because, you know, he signed off on tanks, which is not what a coach is supposed to do. But, I mean, he'll tell you he's playing chess, not checkers. I don't think Don Nelson cares anything about what I have to say about him. But still, Mike Brown, who probably doesn't care either. Maybe he's the Don Nelson of our generation.
Mike Brown, 454-304. So 600 winning percentage. Also 50-40 in the playoffs.
Right now.
He's also coached Steph Curry. He's coached LeBron James.
Mike Brown's career win percentage is 599. Don Nelson is 557.
Wow. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Mike Brown?
He's not going to be, but... It's just crazy to think about what an incredible career, and yet all people did yesterday was make fun of him. And I'm like, okay, if you're making fun of Mike Brown and you think he's a terrible coach, name me the good coaches. Who are the good coaches?
If you're going to say,
well, he only won when he had great players. Okay, so well, then Pat Riley's not a good coach. Well, I guess Phil Jackson's not a good coach. I guess Greg Popovich is not a good coach.
Eric Spoelstra won his two titles.
Not a good coach.
Yeah.
I guess there are no good coaches.
Welcome when it comes to football. I do that all the time for these guys. I'm like, Kenny, why are you carrying water for this terrible suck-ass coach? And I go, because he's actually good. This coach and that coach are actually good. They didn't have the players. They had boobery as general managers, as owners. They were actually good coaches. Go ahead.
All right, also in the NBA yesterday, Brian Windhorst on ESPN made a comparison of the Milwaukee Bucks' handling of the Damian Lillard trade following his dismissal from Milwaukee, compared it to a current Cleveland Browns quarterback.
As a Cleveland Browns fan, this is akin to what the Deshaun Watson contract was, except for Deshaun Watson wouldn't even be on the team anymore, which is pretty much the way it is anyway, but that's another story for another day. This is that level of mortgaging, except for the player is not going to be there. There's nothing like a small market that's losing a superstar. The desperation is almost depressing.
Yeah, he's dead ass on point about that. There were a lot of people when that trade went down. I remember exactly where I was when the move to stretch his contract, Dame Lillard's contract, went down. There were a lot of people who were making the same comparison, and you can't help but make the same comparison because we all know who part owner of the Bucks is. So yeah, you're going to make that comparison. Fair enough by Brian Windhorst. I didn't know he was a Browns fan. I should have just assumed. I didn't know he's. I just thought he was all basketball.
He's from the area.
Yeah, but there's guys who are from here who do other sports and like, I don't care about
the
Cavs or Browns or whatever. I'm a Guardians. Like, they do that. So I thought maybe he was just all basketball. I didn't know he followed the Browns at all.
I was going to say, Pat Boyle this morning on the early show had some scathing things to say about his take. I'll tell you about it off air.
About Brian Windhorst's take?
About that take that he just made regarding Watson and the Lillard deal.
Oh, God. Well, I'm sure he took it to a different level. I'm not going to get upset with Brian Windhorst over making that comparison.
Finally, we have an update here. Red Panda has been released from the hospital with a fractured wrist after her fall at the WNBA Commissioner's Cup halftime show. So it looks like everything's stable right now with Red Panda. It's tough to see that sort of situation, but what was it? What was
you remember when Kobe had the Achilles, he was never the same. And people were wondering the same thing. Now, I thought that she was great after the knee injury.
She came back. The second act of her career was amazing.
Red Panda's
got to
be.
They counted her out. All the other halftime shows counted her out. They gave her bulletin board material. Remember, Quick Change? Yeah, where's Quick Change now?
One of them passed away.
6 feet under. That's what. Try to change out of that one.
She'd be
okay. I'm sick and tired of the dog acts. I've seen them all. None of them are interesting to me. What else do you have? Watching middle school kids go out and run up and down the floor. That's fun for about a minute. Nobody compares to the greatness that is the Red Panda.
Red Panda might be 55 years old, by the way.
Yeah, it says born 70 or 71. She also says she completes about 80% of her performances spot on. That's what I'm reading right here.
She actually has 20% that aren't spot on?
She estimates on a perfect show 75 to 80% of the time.
I've never seen her miss, except for here.
We did last night, yeah.
Lord almighty.
That's it for about last night.
Oh, she's a legend.
I'm looking at the other acts.
She's
Kevin,
a legend.
The chin balancer. He's the one with the big ladder.
Yeah, I remember that guy.
A lot of the dogs. There's Christian and
Scooby.
Because
you don't got to pay them as much.
They were on America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
That's the one who has, like, the crutches, and he's a gymnast.
If Kayla is my assistant and I'm a magician, I got to pay her a living wage. I don't got to pay a dog.
I'm sorry. I want to know the origin story so much. Somebody do the documentary. How did she figure out plates, unicycle, kick them up into the air and balance them? How did she come up with the act? What did she try before that didn't necessarily move the needle? A Lazy Susan? She tried to balance the Lady Susans? Didn't work?
That's it for about last night. Mary Kay Kevin. Mitch just walked out of here. Yeah,